Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
All right, everybody. Chuck Bonnyhill, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up.
That's right. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, and Dr. Jack Schaefer, and also happytrees.co. We're going to bring Sue Moore on up here in a second with Liberty Scorecard, Colorado. Also going to get into the Durham Report. I want to wish everybody a belated happy Mother's Day. We had a very nice Mother's Day. It's kind of cute, though. Sending Chuck and Rev, they went to the PGA Superstore to get me a couple of a nice golf outfit, which they did. But they came home themselves with bags of
bags for ourselves and one for Julie, too. So it all worked out.
It all worked out in the end. So as I said, we'll get to the Durham Report. There's a new Miller Lite ad.
You'll want to be.
You're going to want to see that. But we wanted to bring on Sue Moore with Liberty Scorecard, Colorado. They keep track of the bills and the legislatures. They just do a great job throughout the legislative session. So, Sue, number one, thank you for all you do throughout the session, and thank you for your time this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me. I really do appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it seems like, the Democrats pass whatever they want to pass normally. But this session was, I guess, a little strange in the fact that two of the biggest bills, one, the assault gun legislation that Polis opposed, went down with, I don't know, six Democratic votes voting with the Republicans. And then the one Polis very much want to do, which is really do away with home rule in Colorado.
And give all zoning and land use to him.
To him and whatever politically correct, failed. And I'm told by people, there were lobbyists in the Capitol, that he was screaming at the legislators when it went down.
Right. Yes, that would be Senate Bill 213, the land use bill. Right. And yeah, that was kind of a shocker. You know, they ran. So that was started in the Senate. And then a lot of the really bad stuff got amended out of it. Some of the home rule initiatives and stripping away some of the local control stuff. So, but then when it went back to the House, they added all that stuff back in. And then
it went back to the Senate, who refused to do anything.
They said, no, we don't think anyway. So they just couldn't reconcile it. So thank God that bill died. The legislators were getting a lot of pushback from the Colorado Municipal League, all these local mayors, all these county commissioners. You know, they don't like having that power taken away from them, and rightly so.
Yeah, rightly so, because that's really 90% of what they do.
Right. That's where it should be decided. Although, you know, Sue, Chuck and I were earlier saying, because I was saying, well, you know, we had some wins. And I said, no, actually, it's like if you're being attacked, you're like, well, they didn't shoot us in the head. They only shot us in the kneecaps.
Both kneecaps, both shoulders.
So it was all
like Monty Python, a Hurley scratch.
It was all a good session.
Right. We're on life support, but we're still alive.
What's your overall assessment of the legislative session?
You know, it was just in terms of the numbers, there really weren't that many more bills this year. Surprisingly, it seemed like it. But from our standpoint, there really weren't that many more. We rated about the same number. I think there were 645 bills introduced. We rated 453. And the reason we don't do all of them, we look at all of them, but the reason we don't do all of them is either we can't apply principles, or they're conflicting principles. So we throw, quite a few of them out. But, you know, with 453, we still have a lot of data points that we're collecting. So in terms of numbers, it really wasn't that much different from last year. But the severity of the bills and what they're attacking has changed. And the emphasis on especially property rights, the attack on property rights and support for tenants at the expense of landlords in the name of affordable housing, which none of these bills really accomplish what they say they're going to do. But what they don't admit is that what they really want to do is control the housing market. They want to, collect as many, put together as much government housing as they can.
Right.
So it's really more of a communist socialist kind of an agenda. So it's really insidious.
Right.
But the titles of the bills would make you think that they're really just trying to protect tenant rights, and that's just not the case.
Not the case. Well, and then I probably should have had you explain this at first. So folks who aren't familiar with you guys, talk about how you guys, because I think you have the most objective way of looking at it. And how do you rate these bills, and what are the things you look at?
Right. So we have a group of people, and it changes from week to week, but we have about, you know, 5 to 10 you know, really committed people who read the bills on a weekly basis. We look at all of them as they're introduced. And then we have a matrix of liberty principles, you know, individual rights, limited government, fiscal responsibility, those kinds of principles. We've got a worksheet that we use that we kind of read through as we're reading bills. And then every Sunday, sometimes twice a week, we get together by Zoom and we discuss the bills. And then we, you know, we take a vote. Are we going to support or oppose a bill? You know, does it support principles? Does it violate certain principles? So there's a lot of work that goes into it before we even have a conversation, and people are entering their notes. It's kind of wonky, but so that's really how the process works. So we'll either support or oppose a bill, and then we compare our positions with those of each legislator. And we really only collect, the data points that we collect are the final committee votes and right. then third reading votes on the House, the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate. So, you know, but for each legislator, we've got at least 450 data points. So then
we're about one of the really helpful things, you give grades to every legislator.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then at the end of the session, and I really just finished this today, so this is hot off the presses, but yeah, then we assign grades and, you know, congratulate those who did really well. And, you know, we don't berate anyone, but, you know, the numbers speak for themselves.
Well, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Republican grades seem to be sliding down on average.
they have this year. Last year, we had 4 people with 90 or above. This year, we only have 2. Then we've got 2 with 80 or above. So 2 A's, 2 B's, 3 C's, 14 D's, and 10 F's.
And that's the Republicans.
Republicans, yeah. No one on the Democrat side can come anywhere near a passing grade. I think the highest was a 27, and it goes down to 14. So,
well, and that's where you guys are great, and I want to have you talk about that a little bit more because, you know, candidates run as Republicans, and, you know, I know some of the establishment people say, well, you should support everybody who's a Republican because they are a Republican, and I always say, well, if they're getting an F from the Liberty scorecard, what's the difference, right? I mean, that's just good to know. So maybe let's give credit where credit's due first.
Yeah, and then I have one in particular that he's been my retinar for a while, but you know, now that
who are the good people?
Who are the ones that got passing? You know, going from C's to B's to A's.
Right. Well, you know, and keep in mind that our standards are really, really high. You know, and
they were really high last year, and they were really high the year before, and they were really high the year before, right. And more people got passing grades.
You know, I can't account for that. All I can tell you.
I can account for it. I know exactly why.
Yeah, our standards don't change. Right. So, you know, we just kind of we let the chips fall. But our two real superstars this year are Stephanie Luck. This is her second year with a 90 or above. She's got 93. And then Ken DeGraff. It's his rookie year with a 90. And again, it's not totally apples to apples because we're – different legislators serve on different committees. So, sure. You know, Stephanie's on House Judiciary and I think Agriculture. Ken DeGraff is on some other committees. So, but again, you know, if we collect 450 data points and it's really principles based, we feel like we have enough data to, you know, to present objective. So Stephanie Luck, Ken DeGraff, and then the B's, Scott Bottoms. He's also a new legislator. Yes. And then Kevin Van Winkle. He's on the Senate side. And he's always been a real strong guy. So, and then Mark Baisley, Don Wilson, and Ty Winter were the C's. So, you know, we've got some strong proponents down there. We just wish we had more of them.
Well, tell me, my favorite one who replaced my previous favorite one from Adams County, Gabe Evans. What did he score?
Gabe Evans, question. You know, I don't have these memorized, so I got to look.
No, that's all right.
He was a 69.
That's
particularly a stalwart.
Yeah.
Let's go those numbers again. So you had how many A, Bs, and Cs?
Two A's, two B's, and three C's. So you've got really pretty strong legislators down there.
And then how many D's and F's?
14 D's and 10 F's.
So 20, so seven Republican legislators are getting a C or above, and then what?
14 D's, 10 F's. So, So
if you had a school and the legislators were the pupils, you would say it's a failing school.
They need to come in. Oops.
Yeah, we don't grade on a curve.
You're going to have to start. I'm kidding.
All right, F minus. Yeah, that we got.
Give us just because I don't want to go.
Who's last?
Yeah, who's
on the Republican scale?
Rick Taggart, and I don't even know where he is, to be honest with you. He's in the House. I don't know. Cleve Simpson is down there. He's in the southwest corner, kind of Durango area. Mm. Those are not good.
No. Well, let me go back to the session in general, because I'd like to get your feel for this, because I thought it was interesting. A lot of times bills get passed and they're pushed by lobbyists and business interests trying to get that. But it seems like this year there are more, as you said, Marxist, communist, socialist, I mean, more philosophical things. I mean, because business stuff I can at least understand. But am I reading that right there?
You know, I don't have a good feel for that. When we're looking at bills and we're not sure where they're coming from, we do look at the lobbyists and who's supporting them. You know, some of them are trial lawyers. They want to, you know, what's his name? Javier Mabry pushed a lot of the landlord-tenant bills, but that's what he does. He does, you know, tenant rights kinds of, legal stuff. So, but yeah, I don't, it's hard to tell sometimes who's actually right behind it. But, we do follow up to see who's promoting it, who's supporting it.
And what about this Tabor, the Proposition HH, which is illegal before it even gets to the governor's desk, which should be II. What's the kind of fill us in on that and how that ranks in a Liberty scorecard?
Yeah, you know, we don't weight the bills. We're talking about maybe changing that next year, but we haven't done that. And the reason we don't is because then sometimes you'll get legislators running bills that sound really good, but don't actually do anything. You know, let's ban abortions. Well, that's really important, but you know, it's not going to go anywhere. So we don't want to encourage posturing bills. So, yeah, I mean, that collection of bills was just horrible, and probably the worst that we saw, and the fact that they were dropped at the last minute was just horrendous. But, yeah, so I know you've talked to Ben Murray, he's the expert on this, but 303 will take away some of our money to give it back to us so that we can afford to pay our property taxes, and then, you know, ultimately take away our Tabor refunds forever with the, you know, the partner bill, House Bill 1311. So,
Let me ask you about two other representatives, state senators, the leading minority leader in the House, Lynch, and the leading minority leader on the Republican side, of Lundeen.
Yeah, Paul Lundeen did okay. He was a little stronger last year. He finished with a 69. So I think he was like a 74 last year. So he slipped a little bit. Mike Lynch was a 56, so not
high scoring.
Right. And I will tell you the difference. One of the differences this session was we had more legislators reaching out to us. So I think they're more liberty curious legislators, if you will. You know, if we opposed a bill and maybe they were sponsoring it, they would reach out and say, hey, what about this amendment? Or, you know, listen to this piece of testimony, which we always do, regardless of where it comes from. But so I think that was encouraging. I think they're kind of thinking that maybe this is important stuff. You know, we hate to smack them over the head with this at the end of the session and have them go, oh, wow, I wish I'd worked a little bit harder. But, you know, again, we have so many new legislators this year that hopefully grades will improve next year.
Well, I think it's good. You're right. Obviously, you know, people care, and that's where this is so important, because you can turn around and you can go to your legislator's town hall and say, hey, wait a minute, how you got it? You know, you're telling me, oh, you're a, you know, America first guy, blah, blah, blah. And you got an F on the, you know what I mean? What? And I think, and like, we'll let you say at the end, the website where people can go and they can look specifically at stuff. But I think in terms of the session in general, because somebody was asking in our chat thing, and maybe you do or don't have a sense of that, because I know you're just kind of rating the bills. But what happened, do you think, was Polis losing power, or did he really just get through way more than we kind of realize he did? Or how do you see
what
that?
What grade would you give him by his own?
By his own? Our libertarian governor? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, libertarian governor. Isn't this friendly libertarian governor?
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I don't have a good feel for that other than his, you know, his signature bill went down in flames, which is a good thing. But, you know, and it's, and I did see, I read some articles. I just read what everybody else does. But there were a few of those tenants' rights bills that he may veto, which would be great. I mean, there were some really horrendous bills in that regard. So, you know, fingers crossed that he's, you know, at least smart enough to know that this is going to tank some of the rent. And full disclosure, I own rental properties, so I follow those bills, especially, you know, more
closely. Well, and all those things, I mean, they push them under the guise of, you know, affordable housing, and all it does is make it more unaffordable. You know, I mean, and you know, harder to get, and you look at the market here. Well,
when I was lobbying down the Capitol, and that's over a fifth of a century ago, the realtors and the apartment owners association were pretty strong, and now they seem to be not so strong. Is that your feeling, or
you know, I don't know about their lobbying group, but I can tell there was one bill in particular that says you cannot deny a tenant to rent your property if they have at least 200% of the, so in other words, if they can afford, if half of their salary would go toward
that'd rent, be a good idea. Then they would
qualify, and you can't disqualify them. But we all know that you shouldn't be paying more than 30% of your monthly income in housing. So to increase that to 50% is ludicrous. You know, nobody wants to rent to somebody who can barely own, you know, who can barely afford it. So
it's probably going to have to be evicted.
Well, and then, but they had other bills that said you couldn't evict people. And then if you're the property owner and these big apartment complexes, you're like, okay, so now we're just going to raise our, I mean, we got to cover this person, right? So now we're just going to quadruple our rates. And all it does is it makes everything more unaffordable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're just going to rent, you know, raise the rent accordingly so that they can actually, well, I don't know. It's complicated. And then there's the other bill. Oh, I forget. Right of first refusal. Oh, actually, that's the one I was just talking about. But
okay.
Yeah, there was one for that was, I called it the first come, first served. And maybe that was part of that same bill. But I think that language got struck. But it said, you know, whoever applies first, you know, you have to rent to them if they qualify. So many things that go into that decision.
You know, I've dated people like that.
You can't charge pet deposits over a certain amount. And, you know, they passed a lot of that stuff, and it really is going to affect affordability and availability of housing. You know, it just has
to. I'm always amazed by the affordable housing mantra, which is given to virtually everything. When they wanted to get rid of all the open space at Park Hill Golf Club, affordable housing. No, we have to do this for the poor. If we want to get rid of home rule, affordable housing, virtually everything is affordable housing, which often has and does have zero to do with affordable housing.
But once you realize that their ultimate goal is to take over housing, government takeover of housing. The right of first refusal, government can buy your property if it's for multi-unit.
Property. Right, not your individual home, but I mean, that's a slippery slope, right?
Yeah, why not your home?
Yeah. You've got a 4-unit apartment building and you want to sell that, and you get an offer, but then you have to turn around and let the government know what your offer is. And if they can match it, they get to buy it. But in the meantime, 30 days have gone by and who knows what the market's done.
Sure, interest rate.
You know, understand that what their ultimate goal is government control of housing. Sure.
Well, and that was my question. Before we came on, we were briefly talking. So Polis, that one went down. And as you said, he's pretty mad about that. So my guess is it'll be back next year, do you think? Only more, who knows? They usually do, don't they? I mean,
sure. Oh, yeah. We see a lot of the same bills year after year. They'll tweak them a little bit, maybe give them a different title. But Yeah.
And then polos will be twisting arms and stuff. Well, overall then, just a couple more questions. Your overall.
How much liberty did we lose this year?
Oh, you know, quite a bit. I mean, we did. There were some really good amendments that kind of stopped some bills, some really horrible bills from passing. And there was one good bill, especially at the end of the session, about accessibility to government records. And that's important for the press. That one did pass. Access to government records. So you'd file a CORA request and then jump through a bunch of hoops and pay a bunch of money. And then, you know, you might get some of the information you want and, you know. Right. After a period of time. Well, they're going to streamline that. It did add some full-time employees, and it did have a bit of a fiscal note. But we think that's really important. Transparency is so important.
Well, and having been a reporter for all those years and having filed numerous CORA requests, what they do is if it's information they want to get out, they just give it to you. If it's information they kind of don't want to get out, they make you pay for it. And if it's information they really don't want to get out, they say they don't have anyone who can do it for like 3 years and it's going to cost $1 million.
I mean, it's work product, so you can't see that. Yeah.
We're doing a series of stories on the Independent Ethics Commission. And Independent Ethics Commission says it doesn't have to provide any records to anybody unless it feels like it or doesn't. And they don't have to have their meetings in public. They can have them behind closed doors. And that was appealed up to the Colorado Court of Appeals saying, well, that's obscene. I said, no, because it's a constitutional one. This is adopted pursuant to constitution. They're above the law. And they go, yeah, we, the Ethics Commission, are above the law, which is always, it's so great. We're so ethical. We get to be unethical because we are the Ethics Commission.
But back to Chuck saying,
I used to read a lot of bills and get all excited, and these days I just get too depressed reading them. if they're going to pass, they're about to get through, then I might read them. But you guys ever just go, oh God, no, not another one. Oh Jesus.
There's some heavy drinking that happens after the session, but it's a slog. But you know, we've got some really committed volunteers. I mean, these people are just rock stars, and everybody's got their different areas of expertise. Sure. We draw on other, like the Independence Institute, we'll send them some bills, and Joshua Scharf, and so you know, we try and lighten the load, and you know, get the best advice we can, but. You know, the people who do this week in and week out, Victoria Partridge, Steve Dorman, I'm going to forget some names, but we've also got a big group of people down in La Plata County. They're super active down there, and they're very involved, and they really want to know what's going on. And so Marion Tone, Kelly.
My good friend, Steve Dorman.
We're not going to go into that. But Steve is a bill reading rock star.
So. All right. Well, I'm glad the bill reading rock star.
Sue is a knight in shining armor. I don't know if you've been able to keep track, but people love you and what you do on there. So
there's somebody who doesn't like Steve Dorman, though. Huh. Okay.
No, there's not. Let me then wrap this up. Well, first, anything else you think? You know, I mean, there's so much, but you would think want to point out just about this, the legislators or the legislative session?
I think it's important that we thank and congratulate the people who are really, really working hard. I mean, you talk about being depressed. I can't imagine what some of those people went through, especially at the end of the session. You know, you know that you're not being heard. They don't care. They're going to do what they're going to do. You know, how do you deal with that day in and day out? I don't know. But anyway, so kudos to all of our legislators, you know, even the not so good ones. They're down there fighting for us. But, you know, all we can do is kind of educate them and, you know, encourage them to vote according to principles and hope for the best year after year.
And so, and where can folks go to help you guys out? Because I'm sure you could always use
a little money.
It's libertyscorecardco.us. So libertyscorecardco.us. And the scorecard has been updated there. There is a donate button if you're interested, but there's a wealth
of information. That's worthy contributing to, I'd say. You know, we ought to go ourselves and give you a little money.
So. Well, you have a newsletter, right? People can subscribe to your newsletter?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a subscription button there too. And we don't spam you. We don't sell our email list. And we really are only active during the legislative session. So if you don't hear from us in the summertime, it doesn't mean that
you're lucky.
There's nothing. They're not up to anything, at least for the moment.
We all go our separate ways, but we're all working on other.
That's right. You guys do such a very important. I mean, honestly, because without you, nobody would know anything. You go, okay, you know, Lynch is great. Oh, what do you mean he's a 56?
I mean, it's because they say they're fiscal conservatives.
Yeah, not so much.
The case, but but anyway, thank you for what you guys do. I know you're out there fighting for
doing what we can. Well, I try to say truth straight up, right? You don't have to, we just try to get it out there. So, Sue, thank you for your time and your work. Appreciate it as always.
We'll see you later.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, and Leo was, saying, do you push information to voters? No, I don't think, they don't. I don't think they push information on
you. Charlene, agreed, Chuck, about Steve Dormer. Thank you, Charlene. Excellent.
All right. Hey, want to talk about then good news and even better news, guys. The Durham final report came out. I mean, I was like, was that even, at first I was like, what, wasn't that out already? No. So we're going to, if you want to chat on this too, go ahead and we'll read the comments now. You want to call in 888-627-6008, but it's been almost 4 years in coming. The final report, and it's interesting. It was pretty 300 pages, damning. Said the FBI had no verified information or intelligence or evidence when it opened the Crossfire Hurricane in the summer of 2016. As the Daily Mail was saying, so it was a witch hunt. After all, they faulted the FBI and the DOJ, saying that actually it was clear at the time that they had nothing. This I thought was real interesting, buried in there, that it was obviously, this is from Durham, a plan created a foreign policy advisor of Hillary Clinton. You got to wonder if that was Jake Sullivan, but foreign policy advisor to Hillary Clinton suggested they create a false story. That's what they call it. They create a false story to vilify Trump by leaking him to Russia. And that was briefed in August of 2016. CIA Director Brennan was briefed on that. And then he turned around and briefed Obama, Biden, Loretta Lynch, the AG, and FBI Director James Comey, knowing that it was a false story that they were planting. And they said the FBI failed to apply analytical rigor to the whole thing. So bottom line, it's like what we've known all along. What was interesting, though, too, to me is at the CNN was reporting at their top story, special counsel says FBI didn't have reason to launch Trump-Russia probe. The FBI should have never launched the investigation, they said. ABC, Durham report slams the FBI for actions in the Russia investigation.
There's maybe two critical points. One point is that Horowitz did not say that the FBI had no basis for starting it off. And so this is in contradiction of Horowitz, which was generally a straight shooter, but I think that was a bullshit conclusion. And the second key part about this, despite it, you know, being pretty thorough and honest, it made no recommendations, no changes.
I was going to joke and say, so obviously then people are going to be arrested, investigated. They're going to get to
jail. He's like, no. Comey's going to jail.
Nope. Comey's book. He's not going to add, you know, an amendment to his book saying, all that stuff I told you, that was a lie. He's not going to say
that. You didn't believe me, did you?
The other good thing, you guys will be glad to know that the FBI says, nothing, Berger. We fixed all this years ago.
We're
not targeting presidential candidates anymore. We're targeting parents, Christians.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, people who are, you know, patriots, things like that.
We're attacking people, mispronoun people.
If you misgender people, we're investigating you, even though we still don't.
And proof that we've become apolitical is our wonderful job on the Hunter Biden deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that is totally straight up and by the book with true analytical rigor. Is that the phrase?
That's right. They did not subject it to the analytical rigor.
They're so used to.
Yeah, usually.
And those FISA, phony FISA ones? Oh, well, we've corrected that. We've got new phony FISA ones.
So we put Kleinsmith in.
That's right.
I mean, it's just, on one hand, I was reading it, and it's good, and I think it's worth talking about, because we need to continue talking about this kind of stuff so that people, the facts and the truth straight up gets out there. But it is, it's sort of like with Sue, it's like, it's kind of depressing. It's like, so yeah, they're going to do something. I mean, you don't even expect they're going to do anything anymore, do you?
No. I mean, you mean they're actually going to go after that? Oh, no.
No. Maybe Charlene is. Charlene, go ahead. You can weigh in here. Charlene? What? Were you raising your hand, or is that an accident? Oh, maybe that was an accident. Well, it's the distrust you have for obvious reasons. Charlene, if you're muted. Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I have a deep thought about that. But first of all, I want to read you what Emeril Robinson said about, you know, Durham investigation is a sham because the Mueller team wiped their phone records in 2018. Right. Any real prosecutor would make arrests immediately and let them turn on each other. Durham hasn't arrested a single one of them in 18 months. And, you know, here's my deep thought. When they first came out with Durham and his investigation, you know, I've read Cheryl Atkinson's book, you know, anything that gets to us is intended to get to us. Any images that come through is for our indoctrination, our propagandized, state of mind. So anyway, when they released those pictures of Durham, I thought, could they make anybody look more tough? You know, he had the goatee and he had that mean look, you know, narrow eyes, you know, pinpointing at you. And I thought, they're releasing that to make all the MAGA people think, oh, we got him now. We got a tough prosecutor. This is who we got on our side and we're going to get him. And so anyway, I thought that's the stock photo they just use over and over and over again anytime they talk about Durham. So then I went to look up Durham online to see if there were any other photos. And I found one from about 10 years ago. And it's a side angle. And no offense to anybody that doesn't have a chin, but he doesn't have a chin. And he is the most mealy mouth looking person you've ever seen. I mean, he would be like, you know, teaching, lifeguard or, you know, our Sunday school. I mean, he's just not a mean looking person at all. And
he's like, career bureaucrat too, right? So
exactly. Well,
that's perfect for Barr, because Barr described himself as an institutionalist, which you do whatever you can for the institution and you try to do something good too, but the institution's all that matters. That's here. Well, you know, we're going to blame nobody in the FBI. The only people we go after was one guy who faltered and changed an email to go he was an agent to he wasn't an agent of the CIA. And the other two were Sussman, who was a campaign one. And who's the third one we went after?
Dechenko.
I mean, none of the FBI, none of the CIA, none of the DOJ, none of them.
Yeah.
None of them.
And it was all pushed for our benefit to make us think that we were going to have a say in what was happening, just to slow down any resistance that was going to build up, to have us continue our faith in the justice system. But when I saw those pictures of him, I thought they're just pushing something over the top, and it was too much. And so anyway, that's why I knew Durham wasn't going anywhere 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
And read Cheryl Atkinson's book to see what they're feeding us and the images they feed us. And we know what's coming down the pike, I think.
All right, good. Charlene, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, good. Well, and you know, kind of to that point, my initial thought when I saw that CNN was actually reporting it accurately and was ABC and The Hill was, why are they doing that? Right. It didn't occur to me to think, well, maybe they're actually doing journalism, because we know that's not true. Right. So it's like, what's going on behind the scenes that ABC and CNN are actually talking about this? And here's the other thing.
Well, it's pretty obvious why, because it means that it's the end of the thing. It's, you know, no changes, no recommendations, no policy changes, no nothing.
Is FBI, they already changed the process. Well, and here's the thing that I think that kind of, again, going to Charlene's point, is that they don't even have to worry about lying to us anymore. They can just make it up. They're like, we rigged it. You know, so what are you going to do about it? Nothing. You know what I mean? You can jump up and down. You know, you want to come to the Capitol and see how that goes? I mean,
take some time off, go to Washington, especially your First Amendment rights.
When they would have tried to kind of spin it a little bit, but now they're just like, yeah, it was crooked. The FBI was crooked. The FBI had no evidence, should never have launched it, had no right to launch it. It really was a witch hunt. And
so what?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
Is that Jacob? Is that you? Was somebody going to talk?
Yeah, I was going to say one quick thing. Did you guys mention about the Stroke and Lisa Page deal?
The testimony, the depositions? Yeah, what do you think of that?
Well, I think, you know, this was under that Judge Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, once it's a Brennan deal, you know, Trump's finished, you know. But she's obviously changing her tune about Trump.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know. That, I mean, so that's the lawsuit. This is a lawsuit that Trump has filed against them, right?
Right.
Okay. And they were trying to, I mean, which you could see why they wouldn't want to be deposed. And, you know, I got to wonder, I don't know, I'm just suspicious of anything. I mean, the justice system anymore is so screwy, it's hard to know what's going to go on. But it would be very interesting to hear them have to answer questions from Trump's attorneys, you know. Although, you know, what also, is it?
And I just want to say one quick thing. I'm driving. The deal with Durham is he's leaving it open. Okay, so if Trump becomes president again, yeah, then he can go after them. Then he can go.
Oh, no, I promise you, he ran out the clock. The statute of limitations is far run for all those people. Oh, God, yeah. That's why he waited 4 years.
Oh.
Well, no, wait, but wait a minute. If his decision, wouldn't his decision also start the clock?
To what?
Oh, when does the clock start?
Decision, Durham's decision start the clock?
No. That's not no.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the statute of, I mean, you're,
well, it's usually 2, 3, 5 years, but all these actions, I mean, they wanted to run out the clock, and I promise you, whoever Trump gets as attorney general will be another Jeff Sessions, another Bill Barr.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be somebody go, oh, he'll be great. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I work for the World Economic Forum. You didn't know that, did you?
That's yeah. Not
funny. Okay. All right. Hey, Jacob, thanks for the call. It's right.
Yeah, bye. Bye.
But it is, again, it's important because it's easy to get cynical. But
oh, no, really? And you're kidding.
And it's,
what you always accuse me of being? That's right. Yeah.
Which we knew all along. He concludes, I know why it took him 3 years, that it was a false story, created by Hillary Clinton on purpose. Obama, Loretta Lynch, Biden, who doesn't remember, so that probably doesn't count. And James Comey were all before. No, I don't know why they had to brief Comey on it, because he's like, they had to get him in on it, right? They're like, look, Hillary Clinton's well, of got course this.
They get, so he'd go after Flynn.
Right, and start going after everybody. So it was as crooked. And remember, even we were saying at the time, this goes all the way up to Obama. Well, it does go all the way up to Obama. President Obama didn't say, well, that doesn't seem right.
No, that's wrong.
That seems wrong.
We must respect our elections.
So we're going
we
to.
We must have a peaceful transfer of power to the new side.
That's right.
Why we indict them.
Yeah. Well, we launch a phony investigation for them. So, and we'll be talking about that more because I think it is worth going through just to see how corrupt it is. But I wanted to switch. I don't know if you guys have seen kind of along the same lines. Somebody put together a great clip, and it's 4 minutes long, so we won't play all of it, of all of the mainstream media telling all of the unvaccinated people that they were scum and they need to die and they're killing people. And this was back, how quickly things change. Yeah. And again, that's why you don't believe anything anybody says. And just like the Durham thing, do you think any of them are going to come out and say, oh, I guess it was a witch hunt. Maybe we should have thought, Leslie.
Mueller's going to come out, you know, I didn't know. I mean, I could have reported on that on my multi-million-dollar report that it was all focus, but
none of them reported on the Biden family corruption scandals. You know, they just say, what do they conclude? Well, they didn't find anything that tied it directly to President Biden. It's like, well, number one, yes, they did. And number two, it's like, that was what you took from that.
Yeah.
And same thing here. It's, you know, they're going to turn it around, I'm sure, at some point and say, so nothing to see here. Everybody move on. And they will never say that they were wrong about it or that they lied about it. But listen to this vaccine thing. This is really interesting. Thomas, if we could please play the vaccine soundbite.
You are the unvaccinated. You are the problem. It is the unvaccinated who are the problem, period, end of story.
The only people that you can blame, this isn't shaming, this is the truth. Maybe they should be shamed, are the unvaccinated.
It's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks.
Anyone you came into contact with will blame you, as will the rest of us who have done the right thing by getting vaccinated.
Because frankly, we know that we can't trust the unvaccinated.
I think it's time to get our moral house in order, Anderson. It's the unvaccinated who are the threat.
All those vaccinated folks are going to start wearing masks to protect the unvaccinated folks. It's called
a Christian value.
You're basically punishing the vaccinated for the sins of the unvaccinated.
People are not behaving honorably. The unvaccinated are basically saying, well, it's open season for me. I can do whatever I want as well.
The unvaccinated are basically beating their breasts, running around the country saying, ah, we don't care, we're living free, and so forth.
We've been patient. But our patience is wearing thin.
The unvaccinated, a group that includes children and people acting like children. And the rest of us are starting to get pissed off.
The vaccinated feel the unvaccinated are making me upset or angry.
This is not about freedom or personal choice.
No.
Well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No. Screw your freedom.
The other day, Howard Stern weighed in with a much different approach. Take a look.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated. Their freedom.
But you're treading on our freedom and you're making other people sick. And really, you're killing other people.
There you go. Killing other people. I think it'd be kind of funny to see how many of those people had ill effects and had it like multiple times, have myocarditis.
Well, what's nice about that one was it was bipartisan. You know, they had the Republican governor of Alabama. Right. They had Schwarzenegger, who was a Republican governor of California. And they had one other Republican. Oh, yeah, Michael Steele.
That's right. Well, and this from Charlene. Oh, my, what an operation. Shaming people who can actually feel shame. And then from Dr. Donna. Wait a minute. Was the vaccine supposed to save those who got it from the deadly virus in the first place? Cough, cough. Well, yeah, Dr. Donna, that was sort of the initial flaw in their whole thing. It's like, what are you worried about? Right. It's like, if you got the vaccination, you don't need to be worried about anything. So how can I be killing you? Right.
Yeah, right.
It's like, but I mean, it was all a scam. And now they're not reporting. I mean, Alex Berenson is doing a great job. And I recommend his Substack columns, but talking about all of the problems that the vaccine is causing. Right. Right. And, you know, again, of course, fortunately, pharmaceutical companies, they can't be held liable for that. No.
And it was nice. Pierre Trudeau, we don't have a video of it, but he was saying, yeah, the vaccines do have a massive bad side effect. But luckily, I never mandated it to anybody.
I'm from close school.
Yeah. All those whiny truck drivers who I stole all their savings from. And so, I tried to encourage, of course, and take their livelihood and everything else from them. But mandate, no.
I mean, and I think there are people, a lot of people who will maybe before weren't paying enough, a lot of attention, but who will not believe that much. I mean, that's a serious red pill there. And you're right. You go back to all of the shame and the pressure. And you know, we had to wear the stupid masks, which they now say, okay, well, yeah,
they were bad.
I mean, everything that we were saying, right, that we got banned from YouTube for, we're saying that was dangerous disinformation, you're killing people, has turned out to be true. And all of their campaigns, you know, turn out to be wrong. And not only that, not just wrong, but dangerous. People died alone in nursing homes. People didn't get medical care that they needed because they were afraid to go to the hospital. Kids, I mean, look what it did to kids. I mean, the whole, and businesses, all, you know, the businesses they closed down, right? Because they.
But not the big businesses.
No, not the big businesses. The damage that was done is.
Hospitals, you know, they were overcrowded because we forced people in where we killed them.
Right. Right, exactly. And then
we'd put them on ventilators and not give them a lot of things that really could have saved them. But
right.
That's okay.
Yeah, and from iPhone Jim and the military, too, lots of pain there. Exactly. On Charlene, yeah, the protocols instead of ivermectin. It's like all of the damage that they did. And, you know, I mean, I suspect they knew those were lies, too. I mean, how could you not, as these journalists, right? And all they wanted to do, and the shaming of fellow citizens and saying freedom doesn't matter. That was their underlying goal, guys,
right,
is to say your freedom, this that doesn't count here anymore. You know, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, well, you're infringing on my freedom.
More
it's like,
freedom.
Well, freedom is freedom.
More
okay.
Freedom.
Yeah. So I thought that was just kind of an interesting, you know, you look back at all the damage that was done.
There's just so many things from Russiagate to that. I mean, we just go down the list where the left has tried to tell us that we are the nuts, we are the ones proven wrong and wrong and wrong. It doesn't matter. They're off to the next one, you know.
And then they wonder why Trump is doing so well.
Yeah,
right.
Getting indicted, and poor Jean Carroll, you know, who is so brutally treated. That wonderful woman.
She's going to sue him again now, she says. Yeah, so, yeah, that's crazy. Well, and then on another fun note, too, talking about crazy, we're kind of a little bit all over the place. This was apparently, so we've all talked a lot about the Anheuser-Busch ad, and their sales are still way low. I mean, I don't know why they think that it's going to come back. I don't know why it would, you know, at least not for a long time.
They don't care if you buy Corona. Well, and some of the others instead, because, or Modelo or whatever it is, but because it's just one big international cartel out of Belgium. But there is a savior, right?
Miller Lite.
Miller Lite. We can go to Miller Lite.
No, here's
don't care. I'm going to Miller Lite.
Here's what's not as bad, but this is an ad, and it apparently came out a couple of months ago during Women's Month or National Women's Month.
Try to hype their Miller Lite beer sales.
Which is owned by Molson. So if we could please play the Miller Lite ad, Thomas.
Here's a little known fact. Women were among the very first to brew beer ever. From Mesopotamia to the Middle Ages to colonial America, women were the ones doing the brewing. Centuries later, how did the industry pay homage to the founding mothers of beer? They put us in bikinis. Look at this.
We would never wear them ourselves.
Wild. It's time beer made it up to women. So today, Miller Lite is on a mission to clean up not just their shit, but the whole beer industry's shit. Miller Lite has been scouring the internet for all this shit and buying it back so that we can turn it into good shit for women brewers. Literally, good shit. How, you ask? Ladies, take it away. First, we turn the bad shit into compost. Then we feed compost to worms. Push out beautiful fertilizer. That good shit helps farmers grow quality hops. Which has been donated to women brewers to make their own really good shit. But there's definitely more shit out there. In your attic, in the garage, in your parents' basement. Send any shit you got into Miller Lite and they'll turn that into good shit too. Oh. So here's to women. Because without us, there would be no beer.
I mean, it's just what an incredibly stupid concept. So you're supposed to go look around your home. Although if I know they were selling it, I don't know what they were paying or they were buying it. So the thing there is number one, women made beer first. I mean, I don't know how you could even, say that. Right. I mean,
you can't. I mean,
it's like, yeah. Oh, in fact, well, we just made it up. Of course. We just but that's it. Why no one knows it. But
yes, women probably did help with making of barley and beer.
You imagine that men.
Men did too. It wasn't solely. Children and old people.
There is. So then they turn around and they use, because let's see, most beer drinkers are men. So they use
pictures of attractive women.
Pictures of attractive women.
Which is disgusting to all women, of course.
Except for the women who are in the pictures are getting paid a ton of money.
Well, because
like women to be.
Well, but because we know that in the Muslim world, they put women into burqas. But here in the Western world, we force them into bikinis. They're forced to wear bikinis for the sexual gratitude of men.
And make them drink beer.
And then they make them drink beer, which makes them look awful, so we don't have to worry about them.
And so the idea there was is what? So you're supposed to take all the pictures of beer ads with women in them, sell them to Miller Lite, who will grind them up
into
turn them
what?
Into compost.
How do you turn them to compost?
Yeah, I don't.
How does paper become fertilizer? Yeah. I mean, I don't think it does.
I don't think
I know of, but you know, I didn't brew my own woman brewery. So.
And then they're going to give it to female breweries. I mean,
how many female brewers? There are tons of them.
Well, who don't have their own beer, but
they give them their own compost.
And so I don't know what they even thinking was behind that campaign.
I think it's great.
Do some research to see how it went, like how many people actually did it. And I didn't see anything of those. Charlene said, "I'm so proud of the women brewers." LOL. Will the cabal prop up Bud Light? Is the cabal propping up the NFL?
Probably.
Oh yeah. Thomas wants to know, can they turn my hopes and dreams into beer too? They can. Dr. Donna says, I thought she was talking about growing the good stuff that Cheech and Chong spoke about. Flailing, Charlene says, with the whole woke thing. And then Leo said, and then can the female brewers make me a sandwich? And then Jim says, never left a bar with an ugly woman, but I woke up with a few. Well, Jim, that's because you weren't paying them the respect they deserve as the beer makers of the universe. You know, it's like insane. Here's another thing that's insane, too, talking about this woke stuff. So the woman on the front page of the Sports Illustrated magazine coming out, the swimsuit edition, is Gisele Brady or whatever her name is. No, any gorgeous Hollywood actress. And, well, I guess that's arguable. Martha Stewart, 81-year-old Martha Stewart, is on the front page of Sports Illustrated.
And for the swimsuit edition. Because all those little teenage kids like my son or preteen kids go, oh, Martha Stewart. And they forced her into a bathing suit. So,
It bugs me about it. So it's so Photoshopped. First, you don't really see very much of any, you know,
body parts.
It's like, okay, so let's say you want to do that, right? Let's say you want to say, hey, look, 81-year-old women, you're beautiful too. You're not past your prime, despite what Don Lemon says. Then go ahead and let's show her
a real 81-year-old.
The way a real 81-year-old woman looks. Like, you look at those pictures, they were so retouched, so Photoshopped. You would be like, she's like 35, right? It's like, you know, you could put me in a bathing suit and do all of that touch.
Or me.
Or touch. That's right. We could put you in there and you'd look pretty good too if you did as much little wig, better shave, but not anymore. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And the whole woke thing, it's just so disgusting, right? It's like, oh, see, we care about women, but yet we're going to take her and make her look, you know.
Well, you may have noticed the only cheesecake that is allowed these days is women past 50. Doesn't so-and-so at 50, 60, 70, and now we're up to 80s, look great. Yes, we'll tell you cheesecake, but so you can't give it to Miller. No, that'd be cheating. It's only young women forced into bikinis because we'd otherwise force them into burkas.
We force them into bikinis to make men drink beer. The world is crazy. Thank goodness for you guys, though, and for us, and for the folks at BBS, because we can keep things straight. Hey, that is going to do it for us, too.
That went quick. Thanks, Sue Moore, so much for joining us. That was great. And the liberties of
Liberty Scorecard. Thank you to everybody and all your comments on Zoom. All our shows, chuckandjulie.com. We're on Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, you name her, up there.
Not YouTube.
But
Miller Lite.
And I think Wednesday I'm going to go through some of the Durham stuff and see if there's just other interesting things.
We got 300 pages of it. So.
Yeah, I have to read fast. Hey, guys, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you on Wednesday.
Have a good day.